Okay, everybody, let's get our Bibles opened up to Exodus chapter 8 tonight. We completed 7 last week, and the first plague of the river and the waters being turned to blood. Now we start moving into kind of a building upon those plagues. And some interesting things here. I told some of y'all may have heard me. I've got a printout, but I'm going to wait probably until we cover all the plagues before I give it to you. Because what it does is it helps kind of, there's some connecting things between all these plagues. That, honestly, I don't think a lot of us know or recognize. Last week we talked about, Brother Charles brought up that when the river was cursed and turned into blood, the plague hit the river, that the Egyptian people, you know, they had a pantheon of gods. They had all these gods that they worshipped, and one of them was the river god, Hapi, and that this individual in their, you know, worship, you know, that's the life giver, that's the life bringer, and it shows that our God, that Yahweh God, is the one true God. As we walk through all these plagues, and you might think we're going to fly through these because, well, okay, it's Marty shaking his head no because I don't usually fly through anything, but it's frogs and gnats and all these kind of things that we're familiar with, and maybe we've often went through them pretty quickly, and as Marty was shaking his head, that's not typically our, but I don't slow down just for the sake of slowing down either. I hope y'all know that. I really want to kind of mine out all the truths that we can out of the Word. Before we get started, let's go ahead and seek the Lord's face in prayer. Father, we thank you for this beautiful day you've given to us. Lord, I want to lift up those who've been struck and still suffering the consequences of the rains and the flooding last week and for several days. Lord, it brings to mind, you know, the event of 2010 for many of us, and we weren't quite to that level, but a lot of people lost a lot in this series of floods and tornadoes and some of our neighbors in West Tennessee especially. So Lord, we lift them to you. Father, as we open your word tonight again, we're invested, heavily invested into digging into what you would show us in the book of Exodus. And tonight is no exception. So, Lord, I pray you open our eyes and our hearts and our minds and give us the spirit of discernment as we look through these events, understanding they are real historical events. And, Lord, you showed your glory throughout them. Father, we love you and we thank you in Christ's name. Amen. Exodus chapter 8. I think I gave you about as good as I could for introduction to where we are and what happened last week if you weren't here, and the river turned to blood and the waters turned to blood. And it's one thing I left out because it comes into play early on here, is that these magicians, these people of the king's court were able to replicate that. And we kind of made a comment that it's interesting that instead of them turning it back to water, which would be helpful, they actually brought more blood. So keep that in the back of your mind as we go through what the text shows us tonight, too. So let's read. I'll just get started, and we'll stop whenever I think it's time to stop. 8:1. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Come to Pharaoh and say to him, 'Thus says Yahweh, let my people go that they may serve me.' But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite your whole territory with frogs. And the Nile will swarm with frogs, and they will go up and come into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and into the houses of your servants and on your people and into your ovens and into your kneading bowls. So the frogs will come up on you and on your people and on all your servants." Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the streams, and over the pools, and cause the frogs to come up on the land of Egypt." So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt, and the magicians did the same with their secret arts. They caused the frogs to come up on the land of Egypt. We'll stop there. Again, the magicians aren't a lot of help here. we talked last week about, you know, did they have some kind of supernatural power? Obviously, they had some kind of supernatural power, satanic supernatural power, but again, even the devil can do nothing that God doesn't allow. So actually it helped further his cause because it made the plague even worse. It's just kind of how it works, you know. It appears this second plague kind of arrives right on the heels of the other one. The Moses, let's go back to the start of it again. Moses, the Lord said to Moses, you know, go to him again, say to him, let my people go. The what's brought back into the loop here again that we hadn't seen recently is let my people go that they may serve me. So we have that servant, you know, let them come serve me again. We hadn't used that every single time, but that was the initial salvo of comments that Moses was to bring to Pharaoh to begin with. You remember when he first came to him back a couple of chapters ago was, let my people go 3 days out to worship and pay homage to our God, to the God. And so that's what he's requesting again. And it's also telling us that the Hebrews had been serving Pharaoh for 400 years. They said, no, it's time for him to come serve me. Don't miss out on that too. In regards to the way we worship, it's service to God too. So this is a direct assault on Moses, on Pharaoh's authority too. They're going to come out and serve God. They've been serving you. They're going to come out and serve God. That's what he's asking for. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite your whole territory with frogs. Why frogs? You men here scared of frogs?
Or frogs? Pretty bad if they were in your kneading bowl.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out here pretty soon. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. They're a nuisance, if nothing else, right? My bride raised her hand that she's scared of frogs. We've been married for almost 24 years, and I didn't know she was scared of frogs, but I'd have got something else to scare her with now, I guess.
My Bible thinks that they worship.
Okay.
Really, seriously, there was they worshipped a frog god.
Okay. So Kelly's already getting out there where we're going with this. So the Egyptians regarded the frog as a symbol of divine power and a representation of fertility. I think we can understand the fertility part because the tadpoles, you know, frogs are everywhere when they have the tadpoles and all that kind of stuff. One of the major goddesses of Egypt was Heketh, who was depicted as a human female body with a frog head. Now, y'all have seen probably in movies or pictures or images of ancient Egypt, they had a lot of these weird statues of like a human body with like an eagle's head or something like that, right? I don't know that I've ever seen a statue with a frog head, but that was in their pantheon of gods that they worshipped. So you see what's going on here a little bit more now? It's not just for the nuisance aspect. This is another attack against their false religion. God's saying, I'm the one true God. So he sends frogs. Now, this Heketh also had the responsibility of controlling the multiplication of frogs in ancient Egypt and by protecting the frog-eating crocodiles. So God overwhelms their thought process here and just fills everything with frogs. It's also Yahweh who actually bestows fertility. It's God who opens the womb and closes the womb. It's God that does all these things. And he produces them so quickly like that they become a curse. I mean, immediately, here they all are. So it's not like every day is getting a little worse. It's a flood of frogs. God is sovereign. He goes on. He hadn't done it yet here. We're just talking about it. The Nile will swarm with frogs, and they will go up and come into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and onto the houses of your servants, on your people, in your ovens, in your kneading bowls. Who's exempt from this? No one. No one's exempt from this. They're going to be everywhere, and so they're going to be a nuisance for certain. But the language used there, some of y'all's, I thought what I read said that will swarm. Some of y'all's translations may say may team with frogs. Some of your translations may say something else, but it's probably swarm or team. Interesting enough, that's the exact same word used in Genesis 1:20, in which God commands the newly created animals to swarm over all the earth. When he creates the fish, and was to swarm in the seas. Genesis 9:7, mankind is directed to multiply abundantly on the earth by swarming over. The same word is used. Actually, it's the same word used in Exodus 1:7 when we talked about how rapidly the Hebrew population grew. They swarmed over the area. So, the kings, his people, and his servants. So the last mentioned word in Hebrew, servants, usually means slave, servant, or subordinate. So that's probably talking about non-Egyptians employed by or in bondage to Pharaoh. So who would that include? The Jews. They got frogs too. They got them too. They will go up on you and on your people and all your servants. So it doesn't look like there's any. I think we can pretty dogmatically say that this affected the Hebrews too, because as we go further in this, we're going to see the division that happens when he says, and this will not affect these people. So God said to Moses, direct it to Aaron. Aaron's going to do this. Stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the streams, over the pools, and cause the frogs to come up on the land of Egypt. Again, it's almost like they just completed this plague of all the water being blood, which would have killed everything. And now, yeah, we're going to bring life back, but I'm bringing back life that's going to be another curse on you, another plague on you. And this also shows that it's supernatural, because the frogs couldn't survive that water turning to blood either. So God's in control. So verse 6 shows us him actually doing it. So he stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. Again, that's an astounding event, because everything would have been dead from the blood water, the water turned to blood. The covering, the word cover there in Hebrew, is the same word used in Exodus 10 about the plague of locusts and how they covered the land. It's the same word used in when God drowned the Egyptian army in the Red Sea, that it covered them. It's the same word God used in a positive sense when he brought the quails into the camp to feed them when they were complaining about food, that covering. Same word. Now, we know the water turned to blood lasted how long? 7 days. The Bible doesn't tell us about this, how long this lasted. The rabbis, the rabbinical accounts, and the Haggadah says that it occurred over 7 days as well, but that's just rabbinical tradition. We don't know that to be for sure. And then verse 7, here come those magicians again. What do? Did the same thing. If there's already frogs covering everything, what good does it do to make more frogs?
Is there any speculation that they didn't do anything in the interpretation of this?
Not really. Something happened.
Like I'm talking about the magicians there, that they just kind of jumping on the bandwagon and saying, oh, look.
We can do it too. Yeah, that's what it has to be. It has to be that we can do it too. He doesn't have any kind of power that we don't have. But if I'm Pharaoh, I'm asking him to do just the opposite. Hey, you show me just as much power if you reverse what just happened here. Because we don't like this. We don't want more blood water. We don't want more frogs. But again, yeah, brother, that's what it has to be, is that we can do this too. It's not some big deal. So, yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, entreat Yahweh that he may cause the frogs to depart from me and from my people, and I will let the people go, and they may sacrifice to Yahweh. And interesting, he didn't go to his magicians to do it. He said, go talk to God for me. Go talk to Yahweh, not just a God, but Yahweh. Moses said to Pharaoh, may the honor be yours to tell me, when shall I entreat for you and for your servants and for your people that the frogs be cut off from you and your houses, that they may remain only in the Nile? So let's stop there for just a second. Pharaoh requested, he goes back. So does any of y'all's translation, when I read entreat, does it say go pray to Yahweh? Nobody's translation says that? Intercede, maybe? Intercede? It's all meaning the same thing. They're requesting that they go to Yahweh and ask him to remove them. Now, he does pronounce a lie here, though. You think he had any intention right here to let the people go? No. He just wants some relief from the suffering. What about this, what Moses says here? So some of y'all's translations probably say this a little differently. Moses said to Pharaoh, and here's the way I read it, may the honor be yours to tell me. Somebody give me something else there. The first comment from Moses back to Pharaoh in verse 9.
It says, accept the honor of saying when I shall intercede for you.
Yeah. So what's he saying? He's saying, I'll tell you what, you tell me when you want it to happen. That's what he's saying. Tell me when you want this to be over. That, y'all find that interesting at all? I mean, why would Moses even do that?
To prove that his God is the God.
Prove that his God is the God. And shows something we haven't... It shows a trust from Moses here in God too, doesn't it? That he's going to tell me something, and I can go back to God and say, hey, can we do this tomorrow? And that's literally what happens. Let's do this tomorrow. Why didn't he tell him? Why didn't he tell Moses right then, right now? Well, I'll wait till tomorrow. I don't know. But the answer to the magicians is they couldn't have got rid of him. Yeah. Yep. Verse 10. Then he says, so this is Pharaoh speaking, tomorrow. So he said, may it be according to your word that you may know that there is no one like Yahweh our God. And the frogs will depart from you, and your houses, and your servants, and your people, they will remain only in the Nile. Then Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried out to Yahweh concerning the frogs which he had set upon Pharaoh. So Yahweh did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, the courts, and the fields. So they piled them up in heaps, and the land became foul. Then Pharaoh saw that there was relief, and he hardened his heart with firmness and did not listen to them as Yahweh had spoken. A couple things I find interesting in this. What did he ask him to do, entreat for you that the frogs be cut off from you and your houses? I'm sorry. Entreat to Yahweh, verse 8, you may cause the frogs to depart from me and from my people. In my mind, I would think that they're just poof, they're gone again. Jump back in the river, whatever. That's not what happened, did it? What really happened there? They all died. Some of them went back to the river, it says. Most of them just died where they were. So now the Egyptians got to deal with this mass body count of frogs that would stink. And it says that. It was already stinking from that, yeah. Yeah, that smell didn't go away quickly. And you still got dead fish and dead stuff everywhere from stuff that died out of the river. But that's interesting.
It kind of be like that skunk smell. Not going away.
No, it's not. Thanks for bringing that back up, Ron. But the ones that he does send back, they're going to return back to their natural habitat, right? They're going to get put back in the Nile River. So Yahweh did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, the courts, and the fields. So they piled them in heaps, and the land became foul. So God responds favorably to this request. He causes them all to die. The interesting thing in verse 14, the land of Egypt stank. You already talked about it. It reeked of dead frogs. Dead fish would have still been around. It stunk. Exodus 7, 18 and 21 tells us this. This is a reversal of the situation in Exodus 5, 21. Do y'all remember that? In 5, 21, when Moses came to talk to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh made it harder on the Hebrews, that they had to make the bricks with, they had to gather their own straw and all that kind of thing. You remember what they said? They said this. They said to them, verse 21, may Yahweh look upon you and judge, for you have made us a foul smell in Pharaoh's sight. And in the sight of his servants to put a sword in their hand to kill us. The same word was used of this something that's detestable or that you don't like. And we can associate with that. I mean, John made a comment about the skunk next door. So we don't like something that stinks. Pharaoh saw there was relief and he hardened his heart. So once the plague had passed, Pharaoh's back to who he was. Literally, with the words, when Pharaoh saw there was room. That's what literally the Hebrew says. The Hebrew term for room, space, or interval. He determined there was room to maneuver, to back off of his promise, and to say, nope, I'm not letting you go. Now, last week we talked about the water turning to blood, and that there's a direct connection where? To the book of Revelation.
This one does too.
This one does too. Yeah, so in Revelation 16, verses 13 and 14, we read this. Then I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet three unclean spirits like frogs. For they are spirits of demons doing signs which go out to the kings of the whole world to gather them together for the war of the great day of God the Almighty. So we see another parallel to the Great Tribulation, to the end times, right before the battle. So I guess Malia is justified in saying she doesn't like frogs because they're demons there in Revelation. Let's go to this next plague. Any questions on that one? Not frogs just for the sake of frogs. There's some showing them that he is God and this little false female with a fish head or frog head. They had fish head things they worship too, though. Let's move on to the next plague. Now, I'm going to say before we even get started, some of y'all's translations, when I say gnats, it's going to say lice. Okay? So just so you know. Verse 16. Then Yahweh said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth that it may become gnats or lice through all the land of Egypt. And they did so. And Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth. And there were gnats on man and beast. All the dust of the earth became gnats through all the land of Egypt. Then all the magicians did the same with their secret arts in order to bring forth gnats, but they could not. So there were gnats on man and beast. And the magician said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. Elohim, not Yahweh, Elohim. But Pharaoh's heart was hardened with strength, and he did not listen to them as Yahweh had spoken. Shorter amount of verses. Couple of big distinctions here, though. First of all, verse 16, Pharaoh had just in verse 15 said, no, I'm not letting them go, even after the frogs are gone, after he promised he would. Verse 16, Moses nor Aaron go back to Pharaoh and entreat with him, do they? There's no warning this one's coming. He just hits them with it. Now, I made a comment about some of y'all's translations say lice and some say gnats. It's a difficult Hebrew word to translate. It's some kind of small flying. Some people even say it was mosquitoes. Some kind of small biting, which will be a gnat or lice or mosquito for that matter.
It's ticks.
Ticks. Some kind of small biting type insect was just covering everything.
Gnats don't actually bite.
Yeah, they do too. Yeah. they can bite pretty bad. Yeah, you go deer hunting early in season. During archery season especially. They get all in your eyes and stuff too. What about the dust of the earth? The dust of the earth. He created Adam out of the dust of the earth. Marty? Yeah, it's kind of a euphemism for the dust and the dirt you see is everywhere. Just literally everywhere. It's also when God promised to Abraham he would have an immense number of descendants, he says they would be like as to the dust of the earth, Genesis 13, 16. Same promise is given to Jacob in Genesis 28, 14. The point is that gnats will come, because the point God was making to Abraham and Jacob is what? You can't count the dust of the earth. Your descendants will be as innumerable that you cannot count them. Just like what we, you know, the sands of the seashore or the stars in the sky. There's so many we can't count them. That's how many of these gnats, lice, ticks, bugs, whatever they were, descended upon the people. It can also, if you want to go with another bug that's probably the nastiest of all the ones we've named so far, I'll just go ahead and throw it out there. I'm not shy to say that. It can also be used for the word for maggots, which there's a lot of death and decay around, so that makes some sense too. And thus they did. So they did. Aaron stretched out his hand, struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats on man and beast. All the dust of the earth became gnats through all the land of Egypt. That didn't mean the dirt was gone. It was just so innumerable. I mean, it's almost like you couldn't even see the ground. There were so many of these things. That probably makes a lot of y'all skin crawl to even think about that. I mean, it does mine a little bit, and I think I'm pretty tough, but that just to think about that many is that's crazy. Then the magicians did the same with their secret arts in order to bring forth gnats, but they could not. So they tried. They tried this one too. They couldn't do it. Why couldn't they do this one? What's that? That's the easy answer for sure. That's the only answer I got either. So the they did try. They would have been covered in them too, by the way. Think about that. They'd have been covered in this too. The frogs, maybe they could have pushed aside a little bit, but they're not pushing aside these.
Is there a bug god? Because I wonder if there's a demonic component to the other ones that didn't exist because of.
Not a bug god that I know of, but there was a god in their religion over the dust and the dirt of the earth. His name was Geb. But they also, but you, we know that the Egyptians, of course, they worship all these animals and bugs and stuff anyway, but, you know, like the scarab and certain bugs were highly venerated among them, too. The scarab being one we think of. Scorpions were pretty high on, they thought of them, too.
That answers the question I asked earlier. They were doing something because here they
couldn't. Yeah, good point. Yeah, they couldn't do it. And how do they respond to the fact they couldn't do it? This is the finger of God. Geb, G-E-B.
They had connections to demons, and maybe this wasn't a demon god.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So I don't know if y'all caught what Diane's talking about there. She's talking about a lot of these, we mock these pagan god deities, but oftentimes there's something is manifested in the history of the lore of these people would have been from a demonic influence that would cause them to worship them. It wasn't always just them making something up. The demonic forces were at work.
And that's what it says in Revelation. So yeah. The connection maybe didn't exist with the bug god.
Possibly. Or the dirt god. The dust god. Yeah, that's a good point, Diane. And again, he says, so in y'all's translation, when I say Yahweh, usually in your translation it's Lord all in capital letters, right? That's the personal name of God. But in verse 19, it doesn't say Lord, does it? It says it's the finger of God, capital G, little O, little D. That's Elohim. Which, what does that name mean of God? Almighty. Almighty God. So they recognize he was more powerful. Pharaoh's heart was hardened with strength. He did not listen to them as Yahweh had spoken. What's it mean as Yahweh had spoken? God had told him from the beginning, he's not going to listen to you. God didn't tell Moses and Aaron, hey, after you do X amount of this, he's finally going to listen to you, did he? He said, he's not going to listen to you. He's not going to listen to you. Now, there's something else before we move on. You think, man, we are flying through this. You said we were going to go slow. Well, we are going slower than, you know. In pagan myth, in nearly every mythological study you will do, if you indulged yourself in that endeavor, the gods usually do not represent the strongest power in the universe in most of these mythological stories. Usually it's magic or some kind of just other power that can be wielded. The gods can be defeated in most of these mythological studies. This present episode testifies the limited power of the nature of magic too. Magic is not omnipotent. It's severely confined. Only God is omnipotent. Only God is all-powerful. The point is confirmed by his defeating of the magicians here. So he's systematically defeating their perceived gods and their magicians. But remember, Pharaoh's a deity too in the eyes of himself and the people, that he's a god too. The son, yeah. Now we're going to get to one of them here in just a little bit. Well, not today, but yeah. Let's look at this I guess this will be the fourth plague, right? Verse 20. And Yahweh the Lord said to Moses, rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh as he comes out of the water, and you shall say to him, thus says Yahweh, let my people go, that they may serve me. For if you do not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you, and on your servants, and on your people, and in your houses, and the houses of the Egyptians will be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. Verse 22, important distinction. But on that day, I will make a distinction for the land of Goshen, where my people are living, so that no swarms of flies will be there, and you may know that I, Yahweh, am in the midst of the land, and I'll put up a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow, this sign will happen. Then Yahweh did so, And there came heavy swarms of flies into the house of Pharaoh and the house of the servants, and the land was laid waste because of the swarms of flies in all the land of Egypt. Let's stop there. So this is something similar to the very first plague, right? Moses, you go to the river. You meet Pharaoh when he comes down to the river. Tell him to let my people go. If you do not let my people go, I'm going to send swarms of flies on you. Anybody have something different than flies right there? I think that's probably going to be a cross translation, flies. The structure of this in the Hebrew language is almost poetic. It's kind of telling Moses, you go take your stand before Pharaoh. Go stand face to face with Pharaoh and do this thing. Stand your ground, maintain a position, direct confrontation. There's the third plague, there's no warning it's coming. This plague, there's not much wiggle room either, is it? Let him go or I'm doing this tomorrow. There was no rod stretching this time either. There's subtle differences in these, in the way God brings them forth. He didn't tell Moses to tell Aaron to go grab his staff and, you know, strike this or do that. I will send out swarms of insects on you. Probably some kind of stinging fly, maybe a mosquito here, maybe like a horse fly. I don't know. What's that?
Some of the flies bite.
Yeah, there's multiple flies that bite. So maybe directed against the Egyptian self-generated god of resurrection, Khepriah, who is symbolized by a flying beetle. That was their god of the resurrection, was symbolized by a flying beetle. We've seen that before, the Egyptian scarab beetle. We've seen those before, probably, or some kind of image of it. But this is different. Another level of difference here is verse 22. On that day, I will make a distinction for the land of Goshen, where my people are living, so that no swarms of flies will be there, that you may know that I, Yahweh, am in the midst of the land. What do we see going on there? Pretty obvious, right? That also tells me these first three plagues affected those people too. Because now he's making the distinction.
It's miraculous to keep flies in one place, too. Yeah. Flies a fly.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no wall that's going to, I mean, they're gonna get there. So, yeah. Yes, another indication of the miraculous thing going on here. Mine said division. The verb means to make separate or distinct. What is that word? What word in that we think of that carries that exact same meaning? To cut or to separate. I'll give you a hint. Holy, holy, holy. To cut, separate, or to set apart. It's the same thing God does with his people today. We're to be separate, set apart. This is God's elected purposes on display. This is God's predetermined plan on display. This is all that on display right here. Right under you, there is people. But he's making a distinction that can be seen that they're his people. Yes, ma'am.
This word, lies, is in italics in my Bible.
Every time it's said or in just one of the verses?
Every time
it's said? Anybody else's?
It says swarms of flies, but it just has swarms as the word.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was an addition. Mine didn't have it there in italics. In italics, you said?
Yeah, mine's the same way. All of the words flies.
Yeah, so that's one of them things where in the Hebrew, when they don't have a word in there, they add it later to say what it's talking about. But yeah. What's the purpose in this and the separation? Diane made a good point that, you know, there's no physical border between Goshen. There's nothing, you know, no kind of big strong fence or net or something to keep flies out. God's keeping them out. These are his people and he would be with them. And this brings us all the way back to tell us something else about the Hebrew people, doesn't it? Remember back in Genesis when it said where they settled at? the land that Joseph asked for them, that's where they're still at. They're still separated from the others, and that's still the land they are inhabiting in Goshen. That fertile area, which how? That's providential hand of God right there, that they were able to stay in this very fertile area in a land that's not extremely fertile for 400 years. I will make a distinction, a separation between my people and between your people. You may have something different there in verse 23. When I read, I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this will happen. Does somebody have something different there than division?
Difference.
If you go back to chapter 7 and 8, the Lord uses the word, when he's telling Moses to tell Pharaoh, he uses the word, serve me. And in the three instances where Pharaoh gives in, he uses sacrifice.
Where are you talking about where Pharaoh's saying sacrifice at?
Well, in 8, yeah.
Verse 26, the very next verse we're going to get to?
Well, 8, and,
yeah.
It says that they may sacrifice to the Lord.
Yeah, I see what you're saying now. Yeah, that he's, where God is saying they're coming to serve me, and Pharaoh's saying so they can sacrifice. You also remember back when the very first time, maybe in chapter 5, whenever he told him to go to Pharaoh the first time, said he made that comment about coming out to sacrifice for me. I think from there, well, not just the Egyptians, but in that whole culture, that whole region, that whole time frame, service, worship, and sacrifice are all connected to each other. And we're going to see, you bring up a great point, because before we finish this chapter, Moses is going to make a comment about the sacrifice part. So now I'm glad you pointed it out, Mike. I don't think I made the connection there. I may have by the time we got to the end, but that's a good connection to make, because that's how Pharaoh was thinking about that.
I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but that's two different things, is it?
Well, maybe to us today.
Well, a sacrifice is like when he sacrificed, a blood sacrifice, as opposed to just, I'm getting in over my head.
Well, I mean, even in the Egyptian culture, well, in the Hebrew culture too, for that matter, they made sacrifices to their gods in some way, shape, or form. You know, even laid out in Deuteronomy and elsewhere for the Hebrew and Passover and all that stuff, there was this, I mean, the concept of sacrifice is deeply ingrained in, you know, Judaism and Christianity too, for that matter, when you think about it. And so that wasn't an uncommon concept for them either, to do the sacrifice. So I think he's just connecting the two himself. But it's a good connection to make, because Moses is going to tell us just in a minute how the Egyptians would respond to what their sacrifices look like. So I will do this tomorrow. Verse 23 tells us the division between my people and your people, this sign will happen. Then Yahweh did so. And there came heavy swarms of flies in the house of Pharaoh, the house of the servants, the land laid waste because of the swarms of flies. Now there's another, before we move on, there's a word used here in this phrase that's not translated the same way that we have it, I don't think, unless somebody has a translation that says the land was laid waste because of the heavy swarms. Does anybody's translation say heavy? Okay, some of the old Masoretic text used the word heavy there, which would be a Hebrew interpretation into the text. They used the same word, kabid. It means heavy or weighty. It's the same word used about Pharaoh's heart being hardened and being heavy. The swarm of flies was heavy on them. So again, that's some sort of rabbinical text being written into it. Let's move on. Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, go, to Mike's point, sacrifice to your God within the land. Well, hold on a minute. You can go do it, but within the land, what's he mean? What's he saying? You can't go out 3 days. You can do the sacrifice, but you got to do it right here. That's what that means. But Moses said, it is not right to do so, for we will sacrifice to Yahweh our God what is an abomination to the Egyptians. If we sacrifice what is an abomination to the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not stone us? Let's stop there for a minute. Mike kind of put the brakes on some of this, so let me stop there for a minute. Pharaoh says, you can do it, but you got to do it here. Moses says, no, we can't do it here. God told us not to. It's part of it. He's going to hit that second in the next verse. But on the first set of verses, he says what? Practically speaking, it would cause the Egyptians to turn on. Because they would be sacrificing animals that would be sacred to them, to the Egyptian people, to their worship. Yeah. Now, we've already made a comment about all these animals they worshipped anyway. So is Pharaoh trying to set them up here where, all right, best way to deal with this is let them do it here so the Egyptians will kill them all? Is that what he's doing? We don't really know for sure, but Moses responds back, we can't do it here.
Moses was saying, let my people go anyway.
Yeah.
So he didn't want them to go 3 days out, and that's a 3-day head start.
Moses is getting, the faith of Moses is getting more strengthened throughout this too. Now, he'll fall some more times, don't get me wrong. He's not being, you know, perfected here. But he's like, God said we got to go 3 days out. Had God told Moses he was going to bring them all the way out yet, they'd never go back? No.
He would want all of them to die. He just wants Moses and Aaron to die.
I think, yeah, he definitely wanted Moses and Aaron dead. No doubt about that.
He would have all the servants to die, or he would have just sent them out.
Yeah.
Because then he wouldn't have to kill them.
Yeah. But he's also got that pride thing going on, too. I think that wrestling match of the pride in him and that he sees himself as a god. Verse 27, we must go 3 days' journey in the wilderness and sacrifice to Yahweh our God as he says to us. So to Mike's point, that Moses is intermingling that sacrifice and service here too. Why? As he says to us. Catch that at the end of the verse? God told him to do it that way. That's what we've got to do. Verse 28, and Pharaoh said, I will let you go, that you may sacrifice to Yahweh your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away and treat for me. What in the world is he saying there? Some of y'all's translations there probably does say pray for me, that very last sentence. No? In supplication?
Intercede?
What is this all about? You can go, just don't go very far, and intercede for me to your God. I don't think it's a concession he'd have authority over him. Yeah, but you'd also intercede if you just want somebody to stop. I don't think he's to the point of wanting to concede that God is sovereign over him, but God has some power in his mind. He's getting closer, yeah, but ultimately his heart is hardened. But he wanted to fly his gone, no doubt. Because in the original, it says, even I will let you go. So that's, he's still trying to hold on to some of his own pride and his own authority that I still got some control here. But Moses says, let me go 3 days. He says, don't go too far. That's just interesting to me. I mean, 3 days or not too far? There seems to be some kind of bartering going on there from Pharaoh. And what does he want Moses to pray to Yahweh the Lord for? What's that? Flies? Plagues? Stop these plagues, please. Whatever it's going to take to stop these plagues. Then Moses said, verse 29, behold, I'm going out from you, and I shall entreat Yahweh that the swarms of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, from his people tomorrow. Only may Pharaoh not deal deceitfully again and not letting the people go to sacrifice to Yahweh. So Moses is saying, all right, this is what you want me to pray, that the flies be gone. And that's what I'm going to pray for. That's what I'm going to ask God to take these flies away. Verse 30, so Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated Yahweh. Verse 31. And Yahweh did according to the word of Moses and caused the swarm of flies to depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. Not one remained. Then Pharaoh hardened his heart with firmness this time also, and he did not let the people go.
They disappeared instead of died this time?
Yeah. Not a let one was left. They're all gone. Every one of them. Yeah. Well, flies don't stink as bad as frogs, so. They just disappear. So one of the clear things here is the distinction is made here between the Hebrews and the Egyptians. The Israelites are set apart. They've always been set apart. That's what he promised Abraham. The indication is clear. God has chosen Israel from among all the nations. Deuteronomy 10:15. Let yet on your fathers did Yahweh set his affection to love them, and he chose their seed after them, even you above all peoples, as it is to this day. Over all other nations, because of no worth found in them special from everybody else. Now, y'all have heard me quote this verse a lot, and you probably know this verse quite well, 1 Peter 2:9, talking about us and talking about the church. Okay, 1 Peter 2:9, most of y'all probably know this verse. If you don't, as soon as I start saying it, you'll like, oh yeah, I know that verse. 1 Peter 2:9, but you are a chosen family, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Now, if you had turned to that text right now, I didn't give y'all time to, but had you turned to it, you would have seen that about half that verse is all capital. What does that mean? It's a quote from the Old Testament. Where does that quote come from? Exodus 19:6. I'm glad y'all asked. Exodus 19:6. And you shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel. So Peter is saying, just like Israel was a called out, chosen, special nation because of no merit or because God so chose to do so, he says, likewise, so is the church. Now, there's one other thing that happened in this text that just got my mind whirling a little bit. I didn't really even think about it until today. I'm not going to go into this in great detail, but it's something to think about and chew on a little bit. The majority of us in here probably, whether it be from hearing it from the pulpit or reading Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye of a pre-tribulation rapture, that all Christians are going to be gone. We're not going to face any of it. And I've told y'all that I'm kind of leaning more towards a mid-tribulation these days. This builds a little bit more of that to me, too. Everybody went through some of this. And then he separates. Just a thought. It just hit me like today. I mean, I've been trying to work through that eschatology in my mind. When I read through this the last time before I came, I was like, hey, there's a distinction made after they face some of these plagues. Because now this knob's about to get turned way up on these folks. All this has been bad. It's about to get a lot worse. Just like what's going to happen in the end times. Anyway, any other thoughts on the text?